Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, as I've been telling you all of this week, today we are going to be talking about a subject that I know all of us can identify with at some point in our lives. And what is that subject matter? That subject matter is toxic friends. Now, this is sort of oriented more towards the gals than the guys, but trust me, I think it goes across the board on so many levels. My guest today is Susan Shapiro Barash, and Susan has some interesting perspectives, and she's even put some labels on, like the leader of the pack, the doormat, the misery lover, the user, you know, the trophy friend, and there's a few others here. Susan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on.
It's a delight. Now, Susan, you're in briskly cold New York.
I am.
And here you are with a subject matter that I know so many people can relate to, where you interact with someone who is literally toxic in association with you. But I want, before we get into this, I want people to know that you have been writing books about women's issues for a number of years. In fact, you've done 11 plus. You also teach at Marymount Manhattan College, and you've been on all kinds of shows and involved with all kinds of articles and interviews through the years. When did you decide, what pushed your button where you figured you needed to write this book about toxic friends?
Well, I had written a book that came out in 2006 called Tripping the Prom Queen, The Truth About Women in Rivalry. And then in 2008, I had published, you know, another book that came out called Little White Lies, Deep Dark Secrets, The Truth About Why Women Lie. And in both books, I kept on hearing stories that had to do with friendship. So in other words, women aren't just competitive or rivalrous at work or over their children or their looks or their success, but they're actually very competitive even when they claim to be very good friends. And another issue was that women so often deny that there are problems or even lie about a problem in a friendship and hold on to the friendship. So I thought it was time to take a look at this specifically, why we get stuck as women in such complicated friendships and why it's so hard to leave them.
Very good point. And there are, you know, we're all human beings, and we all have our pluses and minuses as far as personality goes. With women, I think sometimes that there is a desire for make-believe, and I think there's a difference with ages, too. I think when you're younger, there is a different level of association and need with particular friendships that you might be aspiring for. And then when you get older, there's another shift. There's a different level that goes with that. When you start your book out, you actually have a questionnaire right at the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
before you even get into the story. Why did you do that?
Well, that was a decision that my editor and I made because I had interviewed 200 women for the study and then another 100 women for the questionnaire. And they really work in concert, so we decided to put it right there, to have the questionnaire to show you the salient questions, the salient concerns, and then to go into the study itself.
Uh-huh.
Because this book is really sort of, you know, I wrote it for women of all ages, actually, although you said just a moment ago that you think that friendships evolve and that, you know, at different ages we have perhaps a different attitude, but I did interview women from the ages of 20 to over 70,
mm-hmm.
and I found that, curiously enough, sometimes this is one area where we actually don't evolve. So even though the circumstances
change. Oh, that's
change,
interesting.
Yeah, because what happens is that the need remains. So if you needed to be the popular girl and to have a group following you at 22, perhaps at 62, you're still at it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, it's years later, children, you know, marriage maybe, divorce maybe, children maybe, maybe not, but definitely the desire, the emotional component of it remains the same.
There was some of the statistics that you did from this study that was, I thought was really quite interesting, that when the friendship broke up, usually the main reason, and it was like emotional neediness was number one, and then lack of loyalty and children actually came in number two, and then lack of loyalty, and then men came in number three.
Well, these are all
interesting.
Well, these are all the components of our, if you think about how we lead our lives, men are so important. Children are so important. We meet so many of our friends along the way through our children, especially when children are young. You know, you end up sort of going to a coffee clutch, or you're a working mother, so you identify strongly with other working mothers. And then stay-at-home moms, those who have opted out, tend to congregate. So a lot of it is through children at different stages, really, you know.
It's fascinating. There's, and the falling out with someone that you've maybe had a close friendship with, men were right up there at the top, and different values was number two.
Well, you know, men, because men are one of the glittering prizes in our culture, you know, getting the guy, and because the divorce rate is close to 50%, and women tend to reinvent themselves all along the way in terms of dating or maybe remarrying. I mean, we remarry at a rate of 75% in this country. So when you think about it, if someone competes over a man, or if you flirt with your good friend's new squeeze, or if you do something really reprehensible like stealing or seducing and stealing someone's boyfriend or husband, well, then that's the end of the friendship.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And you can't blame them because
no.
they violated a trust.
Totally. And we hold the bars, on the other hand, you know, for someone who doesn't do anything nearly like that, we do hold the bar so high with our female friends. We ask so much of them, and I think that's part of the problem today. It's a very 21st century problem, the intimacy that female friendship requires and the expectations we place upon our friends.
Don't you think that's pretty much been the case, though, with women throughout history? I mean, culturally, we actually have exposure to more people today
sure.
than we ever did before, but women in the past didn't have much in the way of rights. So the other women that they had as associates were often part of their survival link.
It's true, but I believe that when I was referencing intimacy, I don't believe that those friendships, based on my research, required the same kind of level of sharing of information and feelings. The camaraderie was really what I would call, you know, as a professor, gender identity. You know, here we are, we're women, we're all in it together. We all know we live and die in the patriarchy, you know, so therefore we're second-rate citizens. I mean, women rallied around for, say, you know, the suffragette movement or the second wave of feminism. That really yielded female bonds. But the kind of connection that women have today, I mean, your sister might live 3,000 miles away. Your close friend in the town you are at that's it. You know, that's who you confide in. And I think that happened so much. Families and sisters and relatives had a different, you know, all female, of course, you know, relatives and so forth. I mean, that was how it worked in ages past. I don't know if you ever watched Mad Men.
No, I don't.
It's a really interesting series. But in it, I'm always intrigued by these early 60s wives and these early 60s working women who ended up being secretaries, of course, for the most part in those days. And the level of connection, they were all in it together, but there was no spilling your guts and your desires and disclosing your deepest fears and greatest hope with these women. The friendships weren't set up that way. Everyone was much more guarded.
I think that is true on certain levels, but I do think on other levels, I think women were indoctrinated very much that way. When I think about it, you're probably right when you look at all the old things that they've got, like Peyton Place and stuff like that, that was really promoted. That was a breakthrough period.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 60s, I think that's probably when it made its shift, because women all of a sudden said, I don't have to stay in this particular patterning. So you've made a very interesting point, and I do think it's a cultural situation. But I know that when I would talk to my grandmother and she would talk about her relationships, they had very, very tight relationships with certain people. But you're right, they were very guarded.
Yes, I think there was a lot of pride, and mm-hmm. if there was a family problem, everyone hushed it up, and so you didn't really seek out that kind of support. The support was in, again, just sort of like, here I am, I'm a woman and I'm married and you're my neighbor and you're married and we have these little babies, and a lot of what I would call mirroring in my book, a chapter called The Mirroring Friend, where the circumstances are the same and that's enough to create mm-hmm. the bond. Mm-hmm. But I think there are so many other ways to be friends today. And again, just so much expectation placed on the relationship, which is why it's so devastating when it doesn't work.
Yes, I think that has always been the case when you have a falling out and you have someone that you've trusted and you've known. Now, you talk about a toxic friendship. Describe how that application occurs. I mean, toxic is a pretty strong word.
It is a strong word.
Why did you choose that?
Well, this book is not only, you know, toxic friends, well, it's because it represents sort of the darkest and most difficult of friendships. But I, as you said earlier, I have these 10 categories, and some of them are actually very positive.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I start out with, you know, I divide the book into three sections. So, you know, those, the ones we tolerate, the ones we ditch, and the ones we keep. And there are sharers, there's the mirroring friend, there's the authentic friend. These are healthy bonds. Are they perfect? Nothing's perfect, but they work. They really are successful.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a friend who is really, she is toxic. She's your frenemy. She despises you for what's great about you and at the same time respects it. So now it's complicated, because if she's jealous of you, that's a dark emotion.
That is true. And it's a fascinating thing. If you have someone who is supposedly a friend and they really are maybe sometimes trying to climb a professional or a social
mm-hmm.
ladder, and then they look at you and they go, well, gee whiz, I should have what you've got. That, after a while, can really do some damage. And
it does.
Psychologically, it can really undermine a person. What would you recommend to someone that has an individual like that in their life, and they go, gee whiz, what do I do here? I feel like this person is jealous. My feeling is you just make it okay, make excuses, and say bon voyage. But what would you recommend?
Well, we're talking about two different chapters in the book. One is the frenemy, and the other is the user. Now, sometimes when you're being used, your friend realizes that you have something that could benefit her. Some women are very straight up about it. Hey, sure, so I used her. You know, life is short. I have a lot to do. I have kids. I've got a job. I've got, you know, a husband or whatever, you know. I'm a single mother, whatever it is. I need this friend to do the carpooling. I need this friend to introduce me to the right person for work. And so they make no bones about it. And that is successful on some levels.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, only if, you know, you yourself say, okay, so she can do that for me. It's a quid pro quo. I can do this for her. But when it really is, as you describe it, where it's really uncomfortable and you feel that this person could undermine you, then you have to really ask yourself, why am I here?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what do I get from this friend? And it's very hard for women to extricate themselves even from the most toxic friendship. There's always a rationale for staying. Oh, well, she is an awful friend. She is a taker. She is a user. She is an energy vampire, but she was there when my appendix burst. She was there when my son fell on the baseball field and I couldn't get there. You know, we went to college together. Our mothers were friends. It goes on and on. It was just really, really interesting to me
mm-hmm.
how many ways we can explain why we stay despite our discomfort.
Mm-hmm. Don't you think that's a natural patterning for women? Look at the situations with marriages, with abuse. I mean, just so many different things. I'm always fascinated when I'll hear remarks made by men when they'll hear a horrific story about a woman that has stayed in an abusive. In fact, I'll just recall something I heard on the radio. It was just a couple of days ago about a woman who had been in a horrific abusive situation, and then she turns around and the guy had been put in jail. He gets out of jail. She lets him back in her house. And one of the men said, "She's nuts. Why in the world would she even consider this?" And this person's, poured
so
gasoline
hard
on him.
Right.
And all this. It's just, it's like the thinking of the male and the female is very, very different when it comes to this.
Well, it's very difficult. And, you know, we're raised to be good girls. And as good girls, we don't make trouble. We don't fail, so you stick with something that's failing and can't admit to yourself that it's actually failing. And that includes friendships, and friendships can be abusive and can be very, very detrimental. And still you'll stay. And you're right, it is indoctrinated into us. I mean, we're taught to stay in unhappy and suboptimal love relationships, so why not a friendship?
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point. Let's talk about the doormat. That's one of my favorite terms. I had a very personal experience relative to that. It wasn't with another woman. It was, in fact, someone saying something to me, a male. And I can remember having the experience, and that doormat term is just phenomenal. Tell us about the doormat.
Well, the doormat is a friend who really, of all of the categories of friends, needs to be, you know, chrysalis to butterfly more than any, you know, she really has a chance to evolve. And in the meantime, she really is the most uninspired of your friends. She's there for all your drama. She's there to kind of sponge up your mess, but she doesn't have much of a voice of her own, and that's very unfortunate. And sometimes you're pegged a doormat quite early in your life, just like any of these other types. I mean, we all know by about first grade if we're the it girl, the athlete, the wallflower. So the doormat knows her place, and she really, you know, doesn't offer anything, but kind of she fills a chair and she listens. And oftentimes the leader appreciates that, or the misery lover likes it. I mean, certain other types in the book, based on my study, really like having a doormat around, but it's not good for her. She needs to improve.
Mm-hmm. And for someone to, you brought up some excellent points, for someone to recognize this about themselves, what would you say to them so that they can break that patterning where they don't need to be the doormat?
I would say that you have to have enough honesty, self-honesty, self-reflection, to understand that while you think of yourself, maybe you delude yourself and you say, gee, I'm just quiet compared to the rest. But in fact, you're not just quiet. You're really just so ready to help and have no boundaries and get pushed around. It's time to break the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to work on yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is, that's really a very, very good thing. Now, you brought out a point in your book about the working woman. And I'm going to quote directly from your book. You say, "What women in business and politics have in common is the dearth of females in their position and in enough situations, a lack of support from other women." Would you say that's more with the younger generation and the older generation, or does it make any difference?
Well, it's different in one sense. The experience is different. I mean, I have heard so many of my students at Marymount Manhattan College these last 10 or 12 years even sort of, you know, disparaging feminism. And I say to them, wait a second. You wouldn't leave these halls and have the options you have in the work world without the feminist march of the 60s and the fight to have women in the workplace. So how does it work? Well, it's very hierarchical based on age. What you have is a woman who's a seasoned woman in the workplace. She's in her 50s. She might not befriend a woman in her 40s, because she'll feel, well, I'm 55, this woman's 42. I guess, you know, I'll be eased out and she could be next. But she might befriend and mentor a woman who's 28.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the work world works for women, and it's all based on a limited goods theory, which we've all had, you know, not enough pie. If she gets it, I can't have it. And as a result, these are kind of pseudo-friendships rather than authentic friendships because everyone's always watching her back. And in the downturn, it's even worse. I mean, I've spoken with women since the downturn who are just, you know, more worried than ever about, gee, how many token women can be here and what will happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really lead its, you know, lend itself rather to healthy bonds.
That brings me to a point, and that is that there is a lot of old thinking that women have that they need to dump. And one of the factors is they need to have enough confidence in themselves to respect themselves enough to know that they're going to be able to make it. They don't have to be out there with a cutthroat attitude. So many times I encounter women having an isolationist type of positioning about, gee whiz, the glass ceiling is still there for the female. It can be. But things have changed so dramatically. There are more female entrepreneurs today than there are male.
I think you're right. I really appreciate what you're saying. And there's another issue. If we still isolate ourselves, as you say, or if we're still watching our back, then we're not uniting as, you know, as identified by our gender. If women don't unite, then it'll always be 77, 78 cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
It will net, because if we don't work together, then we can't achieve the appropriate results. And if older women don't befriend and teach younger women in the workplace, then the younger women won't have that awareness either.
Right.
This will just perpetuate itself, this idea that, well, she's friendly, but, you know, she stole my idea. Well, you know, there's only one woman who's going to get the position. Instead of women in a corporate workplace saying, hey, why only one woman? You know, and really having almost, you know, a mini revolution over it. But no one seems ready yet.
Well, I think, again, it's indoctrination. And women need to have an understanding. And it's a difficult thing to get to. But men have the same problem. Men have the same problem. And that's,
but to a lesser extent, I think.
They have it. It's different. I don't know that it's lesser. Because men that I've spoken with have just as much a fear, and they're just as backstabbing. They are right there. I mean, you look at a lot of the garbage that's been going on lately. It's not been the women that have done it. It's been the guys. And you look.
But they
at
have
history.
More. But they have more. When there's male supremacy, which there is, then there are more opportunities your entire life. If you walk in a male's shoes, not a female's, you have more opportunity your whole life. It's just the way the culture is structured.
Mm, not necessarily. See, that's something that I'm just going to have to disagree with you on that one. And I'll tell you why. Because of the interaction I've seen, I think that we have a tendency, and this has been indoctrination, to look at a gender specific and say, boy, they've got it all locked up. Now, to a degree, financially, because of laws and other things, that was the case. I don't disagree with that in the past. But in today's world, especially in the United States, there is this need for a shift. And I can tell you, I have spoken and interviewed with a lot of men who have just exactly the same problems that the women do.
Mm-hmm. Especially, I think now, I think the downturn has just brought out the survivor
Absolutely.
Mentality and sort of every person for her, himself. And I think that, you know, in a better economic climate, there is a more encompassing and, you know, there's a richer, more open sensibility. So I think you're right. And, yes, it's true. Obviously, to get to the top for a man, it's also quite a climb.
Oh,
so I would not dispute that. Yeah.
Yeah. It can be vicious. And that's why many times the male said, I don't want to be in the corporate thing. I want to be there because this is what it is. It's nasty. And frequently what I have observed is that men might enjoy working for a female and women for a male.
You're so right.
Right there.
And that goes back to what we were saying earlier about how women treat younger women in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, if they're not really going to support them, then you might as well have a male boss who will be supportive. I've interviewed women who say that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've known women that have said, I'll work for a man anytime, forget these women. And you bring that out in your book, you know, comments about that. And I've heard men say, I'll work for a woman anytime.
Yeah.
These guys are nightmares.
Right. And that underscores the same gender lack of real friendship and constant competition.
It's fascinating
stuff.
Exactly. And a lot of this, you cover quite a bit of it here. Let's talk about how you feel there is the evolution of friendships. What is changing? We all go through changes. Sometimes we've had a friend for years and you've just always had this camaraderie, but maybe your life has advanced and your friend's hasn't. And your friend will say, gee, I wish everything could be just the way it was. And you go, wait a minute, I can't go back there. I'm not going to be burping the baby and having birthday parties and talking about the new puppy. This isn't it. I'm now involved in a business of my own. There are changes that we go through. What have you found in your research regarding the way women are looking at friendships today?
Well, as we talked about before, the mirroring friend, the friend who has the same circumstances that you at any stage in your life, whether you're in college together, you get your young working women together, you get married about the same time, you have a child, or you have friends who never marry and you're all in the workplace together, whatever your trajectory is. I interviewed women who were grandmothers who said, you know, most of my friends have grandchildren as well. Most of my friends are retired as well. So this is something women really like. They like to reflect one another. But oftentimes we don't respect each other's differences in individuality enough because we are just so driven to say, yeah, twins. I call it the twinning syndrome in the book. Hey, you know, you have a cat, I have a cat. You know, you like Pilates, I like Pilates. We graduated the same year. Friends, instant friends. So to get beyond that, to really respect your friend who isn't necessarily like you in style or lifestyle, but to have some kind of common bond. Maybe it's your value system. Maybe it's your interest in art or books, but something is a much better way to be inclusive of friends.
I think so. And I think that there's a diversity makes life richer.
Much richer.
You may not be someone that particularly likes to go to art galleries, but if friends said, gee, would you go with me, and you go, you might find something that you never knew could be there. And I think the diversity of friendships culturally and on so many other levels can enrich one's life tremendously.
It's so true. And yet we don't always think that way. And so that, and also it creates better tolerance and more acceptance, because if your friend has very different interests and a very different lifestyle, doesn't mean she can't be your friend.
That's right.
You know, there's an emotional connection, and that should last even as your circumstances change. So if you were friends because you were just there together when you were young, some women say, gee, I picked up the phone, I hadn't talked to that friend in 3 years, it was like yesterday. And others say, you know, it just isn't there anymore.
And then we
mourn that. You know, we really mourn the loss of a happy friendship or an old friend. You know, it's just, in fact, in my study, I found that women really relish the idea of being reunited with an old, long-lost friend.
That's true. And, Susan, you address that and so much more in your books, Toxic Friends, The Antidote for Women Stuck in Complicated Friendships. And your website is Susan Shapiro Barash, SusanShapiroBarash. You know, there's an old saying. They say, if you have a good friend, you can count on one hand.
Yeah.
You are real friends. You are one of the richest human beings on the face of the earth.
That's
I think that's very true. Susan, your book is fascinating reading.
Thank you.
And for those of you, hey, guys, if you wanted to know a little bit more about gals and how they think, this is a great book to get. And for you gals, if you really have some issues or you want to know more about what can enrich a friendship, or what can really be a good friendship. And if you've got one that's just the wrong thing and you're trying to figure out how to get out of it, this is a must-read book. It's very good. Susan, thank you so much for being my
guest
today.
Thank you for having me on.
It's been a pleasure. This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be taking a break, and we come back with lots of good things to share. Don't forget, Toxic Friends, Susan Shapiro Barash. Her website, SusanShapiroBarash.com. We'll be back. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here's the toll-free worldwide number of 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I want to mention a couple of things. One, and you're going to hear me talking about this quite frequently, if you have had a paranormal experience, I am putting together a book regarding unique experiences involving telepathy, psychokinesis, out of body, whatever it is that may have been your particular experience. I'd love to hear from you. And if you'd like to have the opportunity to be included in this book, if you will send your story either by snail mail or by email, either way, I would appreciate that because I'm gathering stories. I'm trying to gather about 100. To share. So all you would do is send the story via email to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Or send it to snail mail, which is the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. And when you do that, then that will enable us to give that some consideration. And I know we've got a caller on the line, and I'll be going to the caller in just a moment. Also, I'm going to be letting you know about shows that I'm going to be appearing on during this month of January. I have just been asked to be a guest on a couple of shows. So they will also be internet-based, and they'll be later on in the evening, and there will be all kinds of information forthcoming shortly. But meanwhile, let's show you how it's done on the Donna Sebo Show. And if you want to call in, just remember, the number to call is 888-815-9756. Let's go to our first caller today. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, Donna. This is Pat calling from New Haven, Connecticut.
Hi, Pat.
Hi.
How's the weather where you are? It's drippy here.
Oh, we've had snow staying on the ground for a couple of weeks now, so it's cold.
Oh, but it's beautiful in Connecticut. I mean, it is just gorgeous there. That part of the country, it's got its magic with every single season. You really are a four seasons environment, and it's just spectacular. It's just absolutely awesome. Okay, Pat, let's get down to business with you. First thing that comes into my mind is pull in your reins a little bit. It looks to me, the image I'm getting is like an old-fashioned stagecoach with a batch of horses out in front, and they're prancing, and boy, you're ready to just take off. Well, you know, a stagecoach can't go real, real fast, but it can cover a lot of territory within a reasonable amount of time by being consistent. But you do have to manage the horses. Now, this to me is very symbolic. So you are just about ready to move forward and ready to be assertive and aggressive, and you are really sort of chomping at the bit, to use an old phrase, but I do think you need to keep the reins in check. It's too soon to move forward fast. I would say just very, very gradually start moving towards your objective. Don't try to make everything happen right off the bat. It's not going to work. You're going to find you just are going to have all kinds of interference. You're going to have one thing after another that's going to cause you to pause. You know how when horses are at the gate at a racetrack, how they'll be prancing and they're ready to go, but you have to wait until the gun sounds. And if you break the gate, you're out of the race. Well, that's something in the way of a description that I'll use for you right at this moment. This month of January is the time to make sure you're prepared, make time for yourself, do whatever you need to do, tie up the loose ends, take care of what needs to be taken care of. When February hits after the 3rd, you're then going to see how you can move forward with a rapidness. But even then, I want to say take it easy. It's like get everything into rhythm. Make sure you got all the horses going in the right rhythm so they're all clip-clopping the way they're supposed to. And I know, again, that's a symbolic demonstration, but I think that that gets the picture across. And by, I'd say, the 3rd week in February, you'll be able to pick up your momentum. So just be wise. Don't try to leave the gate sooner than what you should. Am I making sense?
I'm not really sure. I don't know what's ahead.
Okay.
I have been in a real struggle with anxiety and depression for 6 months and trying different medications, and nothing's been working, and I've been holding on and getting deeper and deeper in it. And I finally saw a new doctor today, and I'm going to start new meds tonight. And maybe you can tell me. He told me that he's not real hopeful. I'm one of those people that is resistant to drugs, or it works one time and then the next time it doesn't.
All right, let me ask you a question. Have they done any kind of a nutritional blood test on you?
I just had some blood work done. I haven't gotten the results back yet.
All right. Has it been like on nutritional levels in the body, like your vitamin Bs, anything of that nature?
Well, yes. I worked with an ND, and she actually has me on some supplements, nutraceuticals, and one of those is helping the anxiety quite a bit, and I just went on hormone replacement therapy, and that's starting to help the anxiety too, but what he's giving me is going to be for depression.
Okay, now I want you to talk with your pharmacist regarding the medicines you're being given. The reason I'm suggesting this to you, and this is not something that's abnormal, when you're on medication, often a medication will strip out of your system nutritional factors that your body needs. Mm-hmm. If you are one of these people, which you say you are, which you're very sensitive to medications, you may be defective in certain nutrients. So I would talk to your pharmacist, who's more involved in chemistry than your doctor is. Now, maybe your pharmacist won't have an answer, but it sounds like the doctor that you were talking with that's got you on nutritional supplementation is maybe someone you should discuss this with, because it's just like my guest that I had yesterday, Dr. Gravlin. We were talking about statins. The one thing that has never been paid attention to is how the physiology, the chemistry producing factors in the body can be offset by medicines. And actually there can be problems that can be created. It's just like with the statins. They literally deplete all of your Bs, your CoQ10. It can deplete a number of things. And this is not in the thinking. We'll say, well, we'll take the medicine, but it's not getting down to the basis of what's going on the cellular level inside of someone's body.
Right.
And you may find that your body may need some very, very high dosages of certain nutritional supplements. And that's where a good nutritionist who also has a medical background can perhaps assist you. And there should be ways of doing this. I know of a number of people, especially as they have matured and they have gone, women especially, but it's happened with men too, where after they've reached the age of 40, then their bodies are not chemically balancing things the way they used to. And you can't get enough from food. You're just not going to be able to. So these are things you need to be aware of. If you already have noticed on the supplementation program that certain things are making a difference, then you perhaps need to have some blood work done to see what's improved. If someone has a tendency towards anemia, and I don't claim to be a doctor, this just is something that because of the many, many people I interact with, the medical professionals I've talked with, there are so many people that have an awareness. It's like we're waking up to the fact that physiology has a lot to do with the way the body will utilize food, supplements, medicine. And where something might have worked, you know, 5 years ago, it may not be worth a hoot today. So that is something that we're evolving towards. For over 20 years, I've been telling people one of the greatest strides in medicine is that you're going to be able to go in, they're going to be able to take a little bit of blood, and they're going to say, okay, you need vitamin B, you need folic acid, you need this, you need that, you need the other. Because all of this integrates into the brain. And the brain is one of the factors. It's creating this depression. Depression typically is a chemical response. Everybody goes through depression at one time or another. There's no one that's going to be exempt from it. But when it starts going into a very severe drop, then there are things that need to be examined. And that is something I would encourage you to investigate. It's not a bottomless pit. You may find, like one woman I know, that she had to be given a prescription by her doctor. And this was a young female doctor that found out this information. She wasn't thinking right. She had no, she couldn't figure out what was wrong with her. Well, they did a blood test. They found she was anemic. And that also she was so deficient in all of the B vitamins that she had a brain fog that was terrible. She had to get a prescription for the dosage, and do you know what? It's turned her around. Her body was no longer utilizing the food that she was taking in. She had cut way back on her food consumption, so she wasn't getting certain nutrients. Her supplementation was not enough. So don't feel like you're in a hole going nowhere. Realize that there may be another approach here.
You're right. One of the things that is helping me with anxiety, just as you said, is a B vitamin. It's a high dose. So I will stay with that doctor. Can you tell me, in the meantime, do you think this new drug that I will be starting tonight will help?
I honestly do not have a response for that.
Okay.
I think that you need to keep a log, and I know we're going to be going on break pretty soon, but you need to keep a log, Pat, on what you notice. You need to be mindfully present, and you need to pay attention to what you're eating, and you need to pay attention to your supplementation, what happens when you skip, what happens, you know, if you forget to take it, because it's all discipline. What is happening with you? Be interested enough in yourself to observe so that when you go in to the doctor, when you go into the nutritionist, say, this is what I saw that was helpful. This is what I see that it's not. But you need to talk to someone who has an understanding of what medicine does, the side effects, and you need to read about them. Don't be afraid of them, but read about them.
Mm-hmm.
See if your doctor understands that. And it could be he or she is just trying anything that they can because they want to bring you relief. But if you're not getting relief, then there needs to be an understanding of why.
Okay.
Okay? All right,
hon,
I've got to go. Oh, you're very
Thank
welcome.
You. Bye-bye.
Keep in touch. This is Donna Sebo, and we're taking a break. If you'd like to call in and chat, 888-815-9756. This is Donna. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Hey, it is cold out there. What about having something that's going to be warm and just make you feel good when you eat it? Well, I've got a couple of recipes here that I think is one that are just terrific. How about if I share with you today an Asian shrimp noodle soup? This is so easy to make. Not only is it going to smell good, but it's light. It's going to give you what you need to make you feel warm and cozy, especially in these cold, cold temperatures. We're in winter, for heaven's sakes. That's the way it is. Unless you're in Florida, then you're not going to care. But even if you're in Florida or in sunny California, you're going to thoroughly enjoy this. This is delicious, and this is wonderful if you wanted to serve it for a company, have a nice salad with it, and then you can have some freshly baked, crusty bread, a nice sourdough. Oh, it's just so good. Well, I'm going to give that to you in just a moment, but let me give out the phone number, 888-815-9756. Okay, this is the Asian shrimp noodle soup. Now, this is, it's so easy to make, and it's quick, believe it or not, but more than that, it's colorful and it's flavorful. So, you know how we eat with our eyes first. This is really going to be quite nice, and I think that even kids would like it. If they like seafood, this is something that's fine. Okay, what you're going to need is a tablespoon of oil, your favorite oil. You're going to need 2 tablespoons of finely chopped, peeled, fresh ginger, and fresh is important. And then you want 2 small ribs of celery, and you want to cut those, thin slices. And then you need 1 small onion. You want to chop that nice and fine. And you need 1 small red or green pepper, and you want to cut it into thin strips, not chunks. So you need a sharp knife and cut it into real thin strips. About 1/4 teaspoon of salt. And then you're going to need 1 package of Thai coconut curry broth. And you can buy that in your grocery store. That's 1 package. It's 32 ounces of Thai coconut curry broth. And then you need 4 ounces of angel hair pasta. And you want to break that pasta up into thirds. And then you need 2 ounces of snow peas. And that's about 3/4 cup worth. And you want to cut them crosswise. And then you want 1 cup of frozen peas. And then you're going to need about 1/2 pound of large shrimp. And you should, to make it easy, they should already be peeled and deveined, and you want to have them. You want to cut them in half. Now, you can use chicken if you want to use something else, and turkey has its own particular flavor, and maybe you like turkey, you can put that in. So all you're going to need is 8 ounces of that regardless. Now, what you do, in a pot, you heat your oil over medium heat, you're going to add your ginger, and you're going to stir it just until it's very lightly browned. Very lightly browned. Oh, it's going to smell so nice and fragrant. Take about maybe 1 minute, maybe 2. Then you put in your celery, your onion, you cook, and you keep stirring it. You don't let any of it, brown. You want it so that it's just got that little bit of color and the onion is translucent. Maybe take you about 5 to 7 minutes. Then you want to add your pepper and salt, and the peppers, you put in there too. But you just, they're sliced thinly. They're going to cook up real quickly. Just 2 minutes there. Then you're going to add your broth, and if you don't like curry, find some other kind of broth that you want to use, chicken or beef, whatever you like, because you can make substitutes with this recipe. And you need to add about 2 cups of water. And then over medium-high heat, you bring the water to a boil, the broth, cook it for about 15 minutes, put in the angel hair pasta, snow peas, and peas, and you cook it until the pasta is tender. Believe me, angel hair cooked up so fast. Just a few minutes. And then you toss in your shrimp, or you can put in cooked chicken, whatever it is that you choose to use, 3 minutes, and you have got a wonderfully, wonderfully colorful soup, flavorful, light. It's under 200 calories a serving, and this could serve 4 to 6 people. So you have something here that really is good. And, if you like to prepare things, maybe you want to start brown bagging and taking stuff to lunch. Put this in a microwave of a bowl, and you take it to work, and you are going to have people standing around you saying, what is it you've got? It smells so good. It looks wonderful. And you're going to say, oh, this is my special recipe. Lots of times when you find something that really works, you make it maybe in more than one batch, and then you can freeze it and then take it to work. Or you can save it for another time. Soups are fabulous for this. I just absolutely am a soup person during the winter months, so I thought I would share that with you. Donna Sebo here, 888-815-9756. I have to share some little bit of what I call wild and wacky information. When I come across stuff like this, I just think it's great to be able to share it with you. In London, England, we're going to be talking about food a little bit more here. There was a huge Scotch egg that was created. Now, see if you can picture this in your mind. It weighed 13 pounds, 10 ounces. That's one big egg. Now, Lee Streeton had prepared the dish from an ostrich egg that weighed in itself 3 pounds, 12 ounces. Now, he added to this sausage meat, haggis, and breadcrumbs. The egg alone took 1.5 hours to boil, and the entire cooking process took 8 hours. I won't give you that recipe. You don't need it. You're not going to have to ask for it. I wouldn't even try it. And then that, and not only that, but I found out a piece of information about onion. And I'm, being of Italian background, I love onions. I think that they have a wonderful fragrance when they're cooking. But we all know that when we work with an onion, we will often cry. Well, scientists from New Zealand and Japan have created an onion where you won't cry when you cut it. That's right. They have done some gene slicing. They managed to insert DNA into onions, creating a sequence that switches off the tear-inducing gene in the onion so it doesn't produce the enzyme that makes us cry. I haven't seen any of that in my grocery store. Have you? Well, somebody figured it out. Who knows? Maybe one day we will. This is Donna Sebo. We are out of time. Tomorrow, yes, we're going to be talking about It's Not the Money. This is a woman I'm going to be interviewing, Jean Bergdorf. She has made a billion-dollar business. She is a phenomenal lady, and it's been in real estate. You're going to have to tune in and find out more. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't ever think you can't make things happen because you can. Why? You're a unique person, and you've come into this world with special gifts, and it's up to you to use them. Have a great day. We'll be talking later. Talk to you tomorrow. Same time, same place. This is Donna Sebo. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.